I'm Jeanne Tiberio, and I'm a nutritionist and a wellness coach. Welcome to Healing Outside the Box. This is episode 106, and I'm calling it The Nutritional Effects of Gastric Bypass Surgery. Today, I want to run through the pros and cons of getting gastric bypass surgery, or bariatric surgery, as it is sometimes called. But first, I want to tell you about our recent visit to Lynch Park in the next town over called Beverly, Massachusetts. Now, this is a beautiful park at the edge of the ocean, and it's got a small beach, but more prominently, there's a huge grassy area with tons of picnic tables, a huge water fountain for the kids, and a hatch cell for concerts. Friday was a hot, muggy day, when even walking outside for short periods of time sometimes makes you a little listless and fatigued. My sister and I met our nieces and their children, who already had squatter's rights on a nice park bench in the shade. After the kids went frolicking under the water fountain, we all went to the stone garden with huge brick gateways on the outside and lots of beautiful flowers on the inside. There were lions on each side of the stairs, carved in stone, welcoming you, or perhaps not welcoming you, depending on how you see the big cats of the wild. The stone walls must have been built about 200 years ago, and you may have seen similar pictures in movies of the stone steps with carvings of lions on each side. Once inside, though, there's greenery everywhere, and it was just breathtaking. The kids were running around in the garden, giggling and chasing one another. The grown-ups were taking turns keeping an eye on the 2-year-old, who was trying to chase but couldn't quite keep up and went on his own little feet. Then the clouds moved in and the skies got dark. It started to rain large drops, as afternoon thunderstorms tend to do. My first impulse was to drive my wheelchair underneath a tree to wait out the rain. Now, perhaps you're thinking, with an electric wheelchair and perhaps an electrical storm on the way, this might be a crazy thing to do. Well, perhaps. But we humans have the ability to weigh several factors before making a decision that may or may not be in our own best interest. I looked up at the sky, which was gray. Then I listened for thunder, which was non-existent. Then I looked for lightning or evidence of lightning in the background, and there was none. Then I thought about the factors involved, the unhappiness of possibly getting wet, versus the risk I would take if lightning popped up while waiting under a tree, and the even smaller risk of getting struck by lightning and becoming a crispy critter. As it turns out, I didn't have to make a choice because the rain disappeared in about 2 minutes and the sun came back out. Well, lucky me. So here's the point to this podcast episode. Every day when we leave the house, we make decisions about risks versus benefits without thinking much about it. For example, do you sometimes drive faster than the speed limit? Have you ever ridden on a roller coaster? Do you tell your kids that they can't get firecrackers, knowing full well you got your hands on them when you were that age? So this is about free will, and in my opinion, having free will is great, once you know all the facts. Then, as a consenting adult, you can make a choice to move forward with one thing or another. In the old days, and by old days I mean the middle to late 80s, gastric bypass was called stomach stapling because it was exactly that. In the 80s, it was a serious and perhaps life-threatening choice that people were making. I was a nutritionist at the time, and I had 2 memorable patients during this time that I was seeing for nutrition counseling relative to morbid obesity. In one case, the gentleman opted to have the stomach stapling surgery, and I saw him approximately 1 month after the surgery. Even though he had psychological counseling and pre-op instructions on what they now call the bariatric diet, he was clearly not prepared fully for the suffering and the physical toll it would take on his body. As of 4 weeks after the surgery, he was still on primarily a liquid diet. He was vomiting almost every day and had suffered severe dehydration on more than one occasion. he was experiencing what is commonly called dumping syndrome. I'll get to that in a minute. The second case that I was involved with started out with the same problem, but a different approach was taken. He was hospitalized, initially in ICU, since his kidneys were failing, and then put on a strict 1,200-calorie diet composed of mostly boiled or baked chicken, green beans or broccoli, and lots of fluids. No juice or soda, of course. He actually dropped 300 pounds over the course of the next year and a half. I ran into him accidentally when he was back on the floor visiting the nurses, and we chatted for a while. He had a huge grin on his face, and the nurses were complimenting him and hugging him. Against all odds, he had stuck by his low-calorie, high-protein diet and started exercising after the first 100 pounds or so had come off. I hardly recognized him at first. He was still a big guy, but most people would not describe him as obese. Many people feel that the long-term approach of losing 2 or 3 pounds per week over a period of years is much more difficult, but I see it as more of a psychological challenge. It is so difficult to do either one of these things that the thought of keeping it up for years must be overwhelming, and people tend to opt for the quick gastric bypass surgery. I'll go back and tell you about dumping syndrome because this affects just about everybody who has gastric bypass surgery. The symptoms are weakness, dizziness, flushing in a feeling of warmth over your whole body, nausea, vomiting, and palpitations, and this occurs immediately or shortly after eating. These symptoms are caused by abnormally rapid emptying of the stomach, especially during the first few years of this, let's just say it what it is, stomach removal. In those days, I mean the late 80s, people were only left with a small pouch for a stomach, about the size of 4 grapes. So gastric bypass was, and still is, a life-altering choice and should not be taken lightly. Now, this is not to say that I am totally in favor or against the surgery. I simply see it as my job to educate anyone who wants to have the surgery as to the side effects or consequences that they may not have seen coming. If you're considering having this gastric bypass surgery, I suggest that you contact either myself or another nutritionist to help you work through the pros and cons. You can reach me on my website, which is healingoutsidethebox.com/contact, and I'll give you a link in the show notes as well. You may also want to consider getting wellness coaching for 3 to 6 months, perhaps to work through all of this on your own with the help of a coach. It is a very difficult decision with both benefits and risks. The benefits are obvious. They are extremely rapid weight loss and often a normalization of blood sugars if a person is diabetic. Because of the tremendous amount of weight loss in a relatively short period, cholesterol levels can drop as well, and liver function tests may return to normal. The long-term effects on the kidneys are somewhat debatable, since the filtering of all that protein through the kidneys and out the urine can exhaust your kidneys. This needs to be watched. Even though you have 2 kidneys, I know, causing kidney damage could potentially shorten your life. But then doctors on the other side would argue that if someone is morbidly obese, they're looking at a shortened lifespan either way. But let's face it, I think Americans get gastric bypass surgery because of the psychological effects, and they are real. Obesity can often be shaming to the people that suffer from it. And the thought of looking at ourselves in the mirror, having lost 100 pounds or so, is hard to imagine. It's also harder for people to get around, just physically. It's harder to find employment, harder to undergo any medical procedure, especially surgery because of the bleeding involved. It's harder on the knees, the back, etc. But I imagine for many people, the number one reason is that they want to look in the mirror and like what they see. They want to be respected and validated, like we all do. I also think that it's about not feeling invisible, which is what I've heard from a few obese people. It's just not a good feeling to be obese in a society where there is no such thing as too thin. Okay, now for the side effects of the surgery. The first and most frequent was the one I touched upon, and that is dumping syndrome. Some doctors, and by that I mean the crazy ones, will comment that dumping syndrome is a good thing because it removes some of the choice involved in food selections. In other words, if you eat too much of the wrong foods, you will vomit. Enough said about that. Number two, another common side effect that almost everyone gets is dehydration. The patient is encouraged to drink as much as 2 liters of water per day. That sounds like a lot to me, and I'm guessing it sounds like a lot to you. The symptoms of dehydration in these patients is, you guessed it, nausea and vomiting, which can lead to even more dehydration. Many patients need to go back into the hospital for IV fluids. Another side effect is difficulty in swallowing, or what is called dysphagia. This can be caused by eating too quickly. The doctors will tell you to eat very slowly and take tiny bites, which is not easy to do if a person doesn't have a real concept of what that means. Because, let's face it, most of us don't count the bites and chew our food for a very long period of time. Another side effect related to this is indigestion. We have all had it. It's the inability to digest or difficulty in digesting food, or the incomplete or imperfect digestion of food that is marked by a burning sensation or discomfort in the upper abdomen. And the doctors will say to you, and the dietitians will also say to you, the treatment is to avoid greasy foods or limiting liquid intake to certain times of the day. Easier said than done. People in our society have just become accustomed to walking around with either a coffee culada or an energy drink or pizza takeout, whatever. Alcohol is discouraged. Well, again, easier said than done. Aspirin and other drugs can also cause this indigestion. One of the more popular culprits are what we call NSAIDs, ibuprofen, or similar over-the-counter painkillers. Next, for our side effects, we have gallstones and kidney stones. About 1 out of 3 gastric bypass surgery patients get gallstones. You may have to have your gallbladder removed. These gallstones are primarily formed by cholesterol. Cholesterol is leaving your body, which is a good thing, but if they form stones, that's not so good. Next, we have kidney stones. These are caused sometimes by a combination of dehydration and excretion of components like calcium, phosphate, oxalate, and other compounds from the breakdown of proteins. Anyone who has had a kidney stone can tell you that it's painful and not a lot of fun to pass. And the recommendation here is to drink lots of water. The next side effect is hair loss. This is caused by nutritional deficiencies because the patient went from eating lots of food to eating next to nothing. The first few weeks is primarily a liquid diet with very few nutrients. It may take 3 to 6 months to stop losing hair and start regrowing. And the suggestion to help this is to keep up with the vitamins and, of course, protein. Now, there are also dental problems from the surgery, and this can be caused by not taking vitamins in the right amounts, which causes pH changes in your saliva after the surgery. And this can be made worse by vomiting because stomach acids come up, and that's bad for the teeth. If you're considering the surgery, you should probably check with a good dentist before proceeding. Now, in general, because of a different stomach size and digestive system, there will be certain foods, drinks, and drugs that you may need to avoid. So a person considering this should talk to their doctor before proceeding about this. Again, over-the-counter drugs like ibuprofen, aspirin, Aleve, can cause heartburn or even ulcers. Your doctor will more than likely want you to stop smoking, and he'll probably tell you to knock off the coffee coladas, soda, and those carbonated juice drinks. In terms of your bowel habits, you could have a problem with either diarrhea or constipation. This might be a personal trial and error thing to find out which foods are your trigger foods for diarrhea. For example, if you weren't lactose intolerant before you had the surgery, you may become lactose intolerant. Now, constipation can be usually fixed by increasing the amount of water you're drinking. Again, 2 liters sounds like a lot, but what do I know? And of course, there's going to be a recommendation for fiber supplements because you may not tolerate a lot of apples or other fruits and vegetables with skins and seeds. So I'm going to summarize here, but this is the basic dietary protocol. For the pre-surgery diet, it is suggested that you establish good eating habits before surgery. This line seems like a bit of a joke to me, because if you're suffering from morbid obesity, we now classify that as an addiction to be treated like an addiction. If you could fix this by saying, oh, just have more willpower, then people wouldn't need the surgery to begin with. But there's an argument to be said for don't pig out just before the surgery, and I agree with this. Basically, the higher your body mass index before surgery, body mass index is BMI, and I'll give you a link to a description of that in the show notes. The higher your body mass index, the more likely you are to develop complications. But there's another reason. Giving your body high-quality protein and nutrients before surgery gives you a stockpile of, well, nutrients. Your pre-surgery bariatric diet will most likely be high-protein, low-carbohydrate with plenty of fluids. And by fluids, you've probably guessed they don't mean soda. Sometimes for 1 or 2 weeks prior to the surgery, they may put you on a liquid diet and have you on only 1,000 calories a day. They may recommend vitamins as well. They want you to try to lose weight prior to the surgery for a few reasons. First of all, it reduces the bleeding when they cut into you, as I've touched on before. Having a high-quality diet prior to surgery also promotes healing because there's less tissue to heal. And if your liver function tests return to normal on the day of surgery, that in general reduces the risk when the surgeon is cutting around your liver to get to your stomach. Now, right after surgery, the dietary recommendation is to go from liquids to solids very slowly. Some people suggest at least 3 months. For the first 2 or 3 days after surgery, it will be all liquids, primarily broth, water, and yes, I'm sure, it will also be Jell-O, and they will give you only 1 ounce at a time. For the next couple of weeks, you'll be on a puree diet, so you'll have to buy a blender. You will be drinking smoothies and purees. You can add the powdered protein to your blender. Certain soups will be okay during this period. And obviously, they recommend only a few ounces of liquid meals at a time, because you basically no longer have a stomach. You have a little pouch. For the next 4 weeks, your liquid meals can get thicker, but still have to be pureed. They'll recommend 6 small meals of only about 3 ounces. After 6 weeks, if your doctor gives you the okay, your doctor will start you on small amounts of solid foods. They usually recommend you introduce foods slowly to figure out what you can and cannot tolerate. They recommend at this stage to still cook everything and chew it thoroughly. Your doctor will more than likely give you a list of trigger foods. That means that these foods will trigger dumping syndrome, indigestion and heartburn, or diarrhea. Trigger foods that are usually mentioned are carbonated soft drinks, thick pieces of bread, They can get stuck in your esophagus. Large amounts of pasta, rice, and of course the nuts and seeds. Any kind of nuts, popcorn, fibrous foods that are hard to digest. Tough red meat will be hard to digest at first. They recommend alcohol eventually in moderation. But this is where I disagree. I think for at least 6 months, maybe alcohol should be off the table. And this is because many post-surgical patients develop an addiction to alcohol. And yes, cross-addiction, as they call it, is a real thing and it's serious. I did a previous podcast episode on cross-addiction, and I'll put up a link in the show notes to that episode. Now, the following foods should be eliminated according to the directions. Sugary foods and concentrated sweets. Sugar. Well, good luck with that. Fruit juice, high saturated fat, and fried foods. In other words, move to Italy, although you won't be able to eat the pasta either. So there you have it. This is a serious commitment, but I believe every adult should make that decision, weighing all the benefits and risks. And I cannot speak for anyone regarding whether this is worth it for them at this particular time. And I've now heard that many patients regain most or all of the weight. My opinion is that perhaps exercise needs to be considered as a necessary part of this healing process, as much because of the psychological as well as the physical benefits. The opinion of many nutritionists and other health professionals is that you need a dramatic change in dietary habits to get the weight off, but to keep the weight off, exercise and some sort of stress management technique is also crucial. That's all I have for you today. Be well. And again, if you have any questions, feel free to contact me on my contact page. And I look forward to hearing your comments, your opinions, and questions on my website. Bye for now.